Hi, I'm David Crowe. Thank you for tuning in to episode 161 of my weekly radio show, The Infectious Myth. You can email me at david.crowe@theinfectiousmyth.com. That's Crowe with an E. Join the discussion and like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at infectiousmyth. Listen every Tuesday at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern on prn.fm or download the MP3 after broadcast on iTunes or other podcast aggregators. You can also listen to any of the last five episodes by dialing 701-719-0990 and following the instructions. Remember that I don't know you're a listener until I hear from you. Send me a message letting me know how you stay in touch with the show, and if you include your mailing address, I'll send you a little thank you gift, which will be one of the bookmakes I make by hand using my own photographs. If you'd like to sponsor this show as an individual or advertiser, please contact me. Donate via PayPal at infectiousmyth.com/donate.php, or you can make monthly donations at patreon.com/infectiousmyth. We appreciate all those helping keep the show going financially, as well as those who recommend it to others. According to PRN.fm that hosts this show, by the end of the year, this show should be looking at close to 65,000 total downloads, which they said is pretty damn good. It's apparently one of the most listened to shows on the PRN.fm network. So thanks to everybody who's listening. And now, let's get to our interview. Tony Creel has been a Chinese medical doctor for 20 years in Jacksonville, Florida. Also, for 17 years, she's been the Florida State Affiliate for the National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC, diligently promoting informed consent rights as well as religious and medical freedom. She's written and taught a continuing education course for her colleagues entitled Post-Vaccine Syndromes, the Biomechanics of Immune Function as it Relates to Vaccination Within the Context of Chinese Medicine. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
To be here. Yeah, well, yeah, it's really good to have you here. The reason I'm talking to you is because somehow I heard about a big win for informed consent in Florida related to a previous policy of mandatory vaccination. So can you describe what's recently changed and how what the policy was before and what it is now?
Well, actually, yes, it was a big win for informed consent and healthcare freedom, religious freedom, personal belief, and civil rights. Basically, what happened was the University of Florida, at the end of August, informed me that they will be changing their admissions policy to be in compliance with state and federal laws protecting religious freedom and informed consent. For months, for years, you know, ever since I started down this path, you know, my job as the Florida State Affiliate for the NVIC is to know and understand what the laws are and the policies and the local problems, et cetera, help people out in the state of Florida with vaccination laws. So for months and years, basically on a case-by-case basis with students at, you know, various Florida colleges and universities, you know, once they get accepted, then all of a sudden they get their notification that they are required to have vaccines. And so all these years trying to get my arms around the laws and the regulations driving these vaccine requirements. You know, obviously my inquiry was driven by my commitment to NVIC as the Florida affiliate. Yet, you know, I'm a parent, I'm a doctor, I'm a person of faith, and I'm someone who is deeply committed to civil and fundamental human rights. And, you know, even though all of those different areas have their own independent wishes, we all want the same thing, which is informed consent rights when it comes to medical procedures that have risks, known risks for
right.
injury and death. So at any rate, you know.
Well, can I just ask you, what are the basic laws in Florida regarding vaccines? Are they mandatory? What are the exemptions that you can request?
Well, the thing is that, you know, all the states basically have the same, you know, when this whole mass vaccination movement started in the mid-60s when states were deciding to mandate vaccines, but the only real mandate is the requirement for K-12 schools. That's the only statute in Florida, and I'm be willing to bet the only statute in all of our states that says the student must either show administrative proof that they're up to date on their vaccines, or the student must have a religious exemption certificate or a medical exemption certificate. And, you know, in the beginning, the schools, the K-12 schools, their only role in this was record keeping. They just had to prove that they had the records in case the Department of Immunization came around and checked their records. So even today, you know, 20 years later, it's still the only statute that requires vaccination. And the statute includes the provision for religious exemption.
And I'm not a religious person, and I presume a medical exemption is not because you have medically scientific objections to vaccination, but because you have a condition that a doctor has said would make vaccination dangerous. So,
well,
is there
more than likely it's because you've already had a bad reaction to vaccine?
Well, right, but there's no.
There's
no way in Florida you can say, you know, let's take HPV. I've studied this vaccine. I know there's no proof that it actually reduces the risk of cancer. I know it has some pretty terrible side effects. So scientifically, I want to object, but you're not allowed to object scientifically, right? You have to claim a religious exemption.
Right. Vaccine safety is not a valid reason for, you know, concerns about vaccine safety is not a valid reason for granting an exemption from the vaccine requirements. So yes, you're right. But the thing that you realize when you start thinking about all this is that, well, a religious belief is a philosophical belief. I mean, you know, 20 years ago I had people saying, well, we really need to be getting a philosophical exemption in the state of Florida, you know, much like at the time California had and a few of the other states.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, well, you know, yeah, that's all fine and good, but that takes, you know, that takes some effort and some time. And, you know, you got to get people to submit the legislation, and the legislation has to pass. And in the meantime, what are you going to do now? You know, right now, your child is required to get a vaccination. That
right.
You have a philosophical, whether it's based on your beliefs about the science or the concerns about the safety or your belief that, you know, it doesn't have to be religious. It's a philosophical belief. So the focus is really, this is what you have available to you. You have to determine if your personal belief is a philosophical belief. If it is a philosophical belief, it's a religious belief.
What do I have to do to provide a religious belief? Do I just a religious exemption? Do I just have to say my religious, you know, brackets, spiritual beliefs don't support vaccination, or do you have to claim to be a...
Fortunately, in the state of Florida, in 1998, there was a court case that was decided by the First District of Appeals. There was a mother who had a religious exemption that the school denied, basically said, well, we don't believe that you really have a religious objection to this. And and it was a public school, and the public school denied it. And at the time, when you went to get your religious exemption, there was a little line on the form that you had to say what your religion was. And so this mother, courageously, contested that, and it went to the court, and the court delivered its opinion saying that due to the separation of church and state, the state has no authority to question anybody's beliefs. Mm. So that was a nice precedent saying that, hey, the law provides for religious exemption. You're not required to go get any kind of special form. All that's required is that you just state, hey, this is against my religious beliefs. So that's kind of where you begin, and that's the whole premise. And so that court case in 1998 served a very useful purpose for the whole movement, because it established that the state has no authority, has no expertise with regards to religion, so it cannot question somebody's religious beliefs or philosophical beliefs.
So basically, if you are not a religious person, you can just say, I have a religious objection, and nobody's allowed to say, well, you have no evidence, you don't go to church.
Right. So at the time, the county health departments were, hey, let's standardize this process instead of having the parents write us a personal note saying, hey, this is against my religious beliefs. Let's make them go to the county health department and request a religious exemption. So, it was a burdensome process, and it wasn't really supposed to be that way, but that's the way it became. And So basically, in the state of Florida, and if I'm sure that you could fight it anywhere, is that all you really need technically do is show up and say, I want my religious exemption. It's already provided by law. You don't have to ask for it. All you have to say is, I'm here to get my exemption.
Right.
So that's the way it's supposed to be. And this court case basically clarified the law and required that the Department of Health no longer inquire as to somebody's personal beliefs or their religious beliefs. All they had to do was give them the certificate, couldn't be denied because it's provided by law, and they couldn't ask any questions.
So, right. So they just made it as difficult as possible, while basically if you're persistent, you can get it without a big deal.
Okay. Right, so that kind of solved a problem that parents were having at the K-12 level. But so around that time, what I was having to deal with were students who were going to post-secondary schools, and all of a sudden they were required primarily to have the MMR vaccine at the time. This was years ago. That was the only thing. They were required to have the MMR vaccine. And in many cases, these are students who already had a religious exemption from K-12 and had never had a vaccine, or had, for some reason stopped getting vaccines. But it didn't matter, because they were, they're adults with informed consent rights, and they had a religious exemption. So what I found was that the colleges and universities were saying, well, no, you're going to have this MMR vaccine. And so so it was a process of pointing out to them that they couldn't do that.
Right, so they couldn't do it because there's no state law that has anything to do with mandatory vaccinations in colleges. So they just made
there's no state law that requires adults to get vaccines.
But I mean, play devil's advocate. If I was running a college, I could say, well, look, we have rules about all kinds of things about entering university, so why can't we just make up a rule saying you have to be vaccinated?
Right, which is where this is all headed. Mm. And so one of the things that I found out, as I was curious as to why was this MMR vaccine required, and I managed to find out that that, you know, as time goes on, you know, all these statutes, every once in a while, they get reorganized and renumbered and you know, put into different boxes and categories and things like that. And so what I was trying to find, because what I was hearing from the schools was that the administrative code says that we're supposed to require this MMR. So I said, all right, well, if the administrative code is supposed to be, all the administrative code is basically the instructions that stem from the law. So I was trying to find, well, where's the legal press, you know, where does it say legally? You know, never mind the administrative code, you know, show me where that was ever, you know, a legal requirement. And so it never was. It just somehow got put into the administrative code mysteriously. So over time, as I would assist these students in, you know, helping them understand what the law provides for and what it prohibits, then we would, through the student, we would also demonstrate to the schools that, hey, we understand the law better than you do. And in almost all of those cases, except maybe one, the school would basically say, you're right. And then they would tell the student that they're fine, just bring me a copy of your religious exemption.
Mm-hmm.
And my argument at the time was, hey, since there's no law, why do they even need to give you some kind of a religious exemption certificate? But anyway, that was kind of like a minor thing, and let's not get bogged down in those details.
Right, but I mean, that's actually important, because they're still asserting that the law applies, and they're saying, okay, there's a loophole, so if you can provide this certificate, you can get out of it. But there is no law that applies, so they have no right to demand that exemption form.
So they had no right to require it. They had no right to require a religious exemption, et cetera, et cetera. And they still don't. They still don't. So this kind of worked, and it was unfortunate, and it is unfortunate that the student has to, you know, jump through all these hoops to prove this. But that's the way it is. And so one of the cases, the one case that did not work was, there was a school, and this kind of dovetails into the current time frame. Basically, what I'm finding over the last couple of years is that now they're saying, well, first of all, on their forms, on their website, whatever, they make no reference to the religious exemption. They just say, this is what you have to have.
Right.
You have to have this vaccine. And so the only way the student can know that there's a religious exemption, or a waiver, would be to inquire. And
right.
So then they get from their student health department or whatever a letter that says, well, you have to provide documentation of having MMR titers first. So you get your titers, send the copy of the lab report, and then our nurses will have a consultation with you to decide whether or not they're going to approve the religious exemption. The other thing that they do is, you know, they'll say, well, you know, you provide for us a letter on church letterhead signed by the clergy explaining what your beliefs are, which, of course, you know, goes back to this 1998 case where the court said, you know, you can't do that.
Right.
So
right.
It's like, it's as if it never happened, and over time, these little things start creeping back into, you know, whatever
right.
their policy is. And so what happened with this particular case was, you know, usually every spring as students start applying for their schools and they get accepted and then they get the paperwork, and then I'm contacted, and, you know, can you help me out with this? So I had a number of students that we had written letters to their schools, and just by luck, I'm not sure if it was luck or destiny or whatever, I happened to talk to the attorney, one of the attorneys at the University of Florida, And usually, you know, when you when you try to talk to these people, whether it's the Department of Health or the Department of Education or, you know, attorneys for the schools or stuff, you know, you never really get to talk to anyone. You never really get to talk to anyone that actually can do anything about the situation. But in this particular case, mm-hmm. I was able to get through to an attorney, and we had a discussion about this, and you know, I basically laid out all the legal points, which is what I do. You know, we go through and talk about all the statutes and the lack thereof, and that's how you win. But so in this case, so we're talking to the attorney, and she was clueless. She did not realize. I said, first of all, I said, you know, show me where the statutory authority is. Secondly, you know, show me where your statement of liability is, and so on and so forth. And so she promised me that she would look into it, and that she would provide me this information. So that was in June, and so I gave her a couple of months, and the end of August, you know, checked back in with her, and this is when they informed me that they would be changing their admissions policy to be in compliance with state and federal laws protecting religious freedom and informed consent. So specifically, she said, well, you know, the new policy will be vaccines being offered. It will replace the old policy of vaccines required. And both religious and personal belief will be accommodated. So that was huge. That was really huge.
Yeah, so
it eliminated this currently imposed unnecessary and unlawful burden of exercising those rights.
Right, but
it was a dramatic reversal of this decades-long policy. And but here's the clincher. They keep saying, well, so they agreed on all the legal points, but the caveat is, well, but we're going to follow the science. And I started realizing that, you know, where have I heard this before? And, you know, obviously, you know, I tried to talk with people at the Department of Health to get clarification on not just the post-secondary school, but, you know, we got other problems in the state of Florida with the Catholic Church denying religious exemption and so on and so forth. And so the mantra, the code words that I'm hearing over the past couple of years is that, well, this broad authority, they have this broad power. These institutions now have the broad power to protect the public health, and they're going to follow the science. And so it was like, well, what does that really, really mean?
So you're saying that they keep saying they're going to follow the science. They're going to follow the science in what aspect?
Right. So so I'm asking, what I've been asking, and I can't seem to get an answer, is what does it mean? Where does the broad powers clause come from? And I finally got an attorney to tell me that as far as the, if I'm looking for a legal citation specifically directing the university to require or recommend any vaccines, there is none. But they keep saying, but we're going to follow the science, and as a, you know, basically, you know, a lot of the argument has been, well, post-secondary schools don't fall under the K-12. We're in the
follow the science for follow the science for what? Is this for their recommendations on vaccines, or is it something else?
Yes.
So
yes,
they will say
for their
right. So they will say to students, we recommend that you have the following vaccines. However, if you have a personal or religious belief, you're exempt from this.
Right. But see, they keep saying, but we're going to follow the science.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what does that mean?
I'm trying to understand. I'm trying to get some clarification from these people as to what that means. And it reminds me that I've heard this before, specifically in talking with people at the Department of Health. And so looking, just to give you an example of this is where this is all going. And once you start paying attention, you start seeing it everywhere. It's being institutionalized. So, for example, in Florida, the Department of Health is basically, if you look at, you know, what their purpose is or whatever, and basically it's coordinating the development, review, and approval of science-related policy. And then you look at another section that has to do with the immunization section. It used to be the Bureau of Immunization. Now it's the Bureau of Epidemiology. And you look and see what their purpose is. And again, the Bureau of Epidemiology. Yep, there you go. Conducts science-based programs. And we share a commitment to using the best scientific data available to shape prevention, intervention, and deep disease control activities. Basically what the college is saying is hey, we are a public entity, much like a corporation, and you know, we have this authority to protect the school, protect, you know, everybody who's at the school. So this is basically what they're going to do. I don't know for sure. I'm just trying to say, well, why would they keep saying this? And why would they say, yes, you are going to have the option, you're going to have a waiver right. Whatever is recommended, you will have the right to decline. But I think where this is going is they're going to use their quote-unquote broad power authority to protect the public health. And they're going to follow the science to say this is why you must have them, and if you don't, you just can't come here.
So you think that this is they've retreated tactically, and they're going to advance again, and they're going to say we now have justification based on public health legislation and on quote the science.
Right.
So you don't think it's over?
They'll be requiring a person who comes onto campus to not be a danger to students, faculty, and staff. And they say that that's one of the things the university has the power to do.
And does Florida
obviously...
Just as an aside, does Florida allow guns on campus?
I don't believe they do.
Okay, I know they do in Texas. Yes. Just wondering, because that could be conceived as a danger.
Right. Well, so, I mean, you know, when you think about this, like you said, devil's advocate, I mean, obviously, you don't want somebody on campus who has smallpox, right? And, you know, so you can argue that, yeah, okay, well, you know, definitely we need to be able to give them the power to do that. So, I mean, I don't really know how this is going to play out, but my guess is that they're not done with this. You know, while they've agreed with me on all the legal accounts, again, they emphasize that they're looking at the science and will use their broad authority granted by the Department of Health to do whatever it takes to protect the public health. So I'm trying to ascertain, well, where does this broad authority come from? My guess is that it presumably comes from the Affordable Care Act, because all of this new language about following the science and the broad authority, this is all new. This is all in the past couple of years. And and that kind of dovetails into, you know, when you start thinking about, well, I think this is where this is all going, is, you know, we have a Congressional House Resolution on the books, Congressional House Resolution 327.
This is the federal Congress?
That I think kind of, it's a federal, yep. And, you know, this is, I think, how this whole thing is going to play out. So this Congressional House Resolution 327 is a blanket endorsement of vaccination, and it's designed to set the stage for mandatory vaccinations for everyone. And, again, they use the same language that the university people are using, that the Department of Health people are using. And it's basically, let's see, I've got it right here. I can read it to you. It just, it basically resolves that it recognizes the importance of vaccinations and immunizations in the United States. And blah, 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 blah. So it's a blanket endorsement, but it's inappropriate because, it's inappropriate to promote vaccinations since the Supreme Court ruled that they're unavoidably safe.
Unavoidably unsafe. And,
yes, that's right, unavoidably unsafe.
Yes.
But so anyway, so interestingly enough, on the day that this House resolution was introduced in May, they already had 24 co-sponsors, and they're getting more. But what the resolution fails to include is that vaccination is the only liability-free drug and medical procedure. No one can be sued or held responsible.
Right.
This is thanks to the National Childhood Injury Act of 1986. Mm-hmm. The resolution asserts the vaccines are safe by saying the scientific and medical communities are in overwhelming consensus that vaccines are both effective and safe. And, you know, it fails to say that hey, it's a medical procedure, and any medical procedure that has risks requires informed consent. So it does not acknowledge that vaccination has risks. It does not acknowledge that the decision to vaccinate should be a voluntary decision. It does not acknowledge the injuries that are reported and compensated through the vaccine adverse events reporting system.
Right.
It does not acknowledge the vaccine injuries are real. So here we have this resolution, and even though it's not going to become law, what it does is it sets the stage for acknowledging that there's some scientific consensus that everyone must have them.
Right, I'm sure. I mean, there's no question there's a scientific consensus that probably 90% of medical practitioners agree with vaccination, but that doesn't mean it's right. Consensus is not always
right.
The truth.
Right, right. And actually, you know what? In talking about this, you know, to people, it's like, it doesn't matter what they think. The fact that there are injuries and deaths, it doesn't matter whether you like them or not, or whether you think everybody should have them. So my, you know, concern with this resolution is that if it's passed, you know, it's just going to be another incremental thing. But more than that, it's going to be a seismic event with profound and widespread impact.
So a resolution, a House resolution is not a bill, it's not a law. So even if it's passed, it's just a
right.
statement of, like, we like vaccines, we think they're great. But, of course,
right.
like you say, that changes the environment around which you think about vaccines. It gets a bunch of congressmen to basically endorse vaccines as safe and effective. And then it's much easier to go to this congressman and say, well, you agreed to the resolution, so why don't you agree to this law that will mandate vaccines?
Right.
I mean, doesn't it seem kind of ironic that, you know, one word associated with the United States is freedom, the Statue of Liberty, all of this kind of stuff. You have the freedom to own a gun, which you wouldn't in other countries. You have the freedom to say things that in other countries would send you to jail. You have a lot of freedoms, and yet when it comes to vaccines, you, in some cases, like in California, you have no freedom at all.
No freedom at all.
Yeah.
And you know, again, just as with this resolution, you know, this whole broad powers and scientific consensus thing, you know, is being institutionalized. You know, first of all, we have decades of you know, for example, the post-secondary school mandates. That had no basis in law. You have hospitals requiring employees to get, and vendors and stuff to get, no basis in law whatsoever. You have the Catholic Church who is allowed to deny religious exemption, even though these are K-12 schools that explicitly are supposed to follow the law, but somehow they get to say, well, we'll follow part of the law, but we're not going to follow the other part of the law. The
right.
other part of the law being the provision for religious exemption. So how do they get away with that blows my mind.
And the Catholic Church,
so that's another example,
has an objection to the HPV vaccine, right?
The church?
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's not universal, but up here in Canada, the Catholic Church has spoken out against the HPV vaccine because they believe that it's to protect against sexually transmitted diseases. They probably are in favor of all the other vaccines, but HPV specifically,
right,
they've been opposed to, and they've been attacked as anti-science and all of this kind of stuff. And their justification is philosophical for sure. It's not based on science, but I mean, I think there's stronger scientific justification to oppose that particular vaccine.
I mean, when you have your members saying, "Hey, what, you know, I don't get that," and then the church will say, "Oh, well, you know, it's the science." Well,
right,
you know, once again, the church is on the wrong side of science. But you know, so that's an example. Another example is, you know, things like the Department of Health, they omit pertinent data about the law on their website. You know, they never ever mention, how to claim a religious exemption or that there's, you know, any options.
Mm-hmm.
So they omit data, and you know, and then there's the shaming by the media. You've got, we recently had a local TV station report on, you know, here are all the schools in Jacksonville where religious exemption is on the rise. And it's like, well, wait a minute, where did they get those numbers from? And they're targeting, so, you know, the purpose of that is for parents to shame or somehow, you know, anybody with a religious exemption. You know, so there's all of that. And so the whole, you know, 20 years ago, what was being institutionalized was the idea that they're safe and everybody needs to have them. And if you get one, you're safe. And now it's everybody has to have them in order for everybody to be safe. So that has changed, but it's still this institutionalization of now it's going to be follow the science and this broad powers that we have to protect.
I mean, that's an interesting argument because basically, I mean, I was told, in the 60s when vaccines were becoming a bigger thing, that if you're vaccinated, you have the immunity for life without having to go through the trouble of having measles or chickenpox or whatever. This vaccine will give you the same immunity for life. And now it's like you need two or three vaccines, or maybe after a long period of time, you should get revaccinated. And then the argument that maybe somebody who's unvaccinated will carry around this strong strain, which will break through your vaccine. Then I guess the most heart-wrenching ones are like the children with cancer therapy who have such weak immune systems they can't be vaccinated, and they are at particular risk of these infectious diseases because of their immune system.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and you know what? Here's another consequence of this follow the science thing, and just exactly what you're talking about is, you know, as long as the debate is vaccine safety, it's never going to move forward. It's never going to evolve because the people who get to decide whether or not they're safe are the people that make them and mandate them and administer them. And so I think, you know, obviously as we have more injuries and the epidemic of all these diseases that are being caused by vaccines, you know, they get to deny it and they're the ones that get to decide what's safe and what's not safe. So the debate should not be about vaccine safety. The debate should be about the fundamental issue, which is the human rights, the right to informed consent, the right to be able to decline a medical procedure with known and documented risks for injury and death. And they're busy trying to get us they're fine with us debating science and safety. Both sides have their own scientists, and they're both, you know, expert studies and things like that. But as long as we sit and we debate about the safety and all that, it's never going to evolve to the point where we actually have some resolution to this. So we really have to focus on, you know, the informed consent part of it. And
I guess it's strategic, because there clearly is a lot to talk about with the science, but I understand your point that you're outnumbered.
Well, it's a rabbit hole of distraction. It's very important, obviously, especially for those people who have children and parents and things like that are, you know, injured. But it's a rabbit hole of distraction. When this whole thing could be, you know, done with, if we could just focus on the need for informed consent. Now, back to this whole follow the science.
Let's go there for a little bit. So informed consent is not religious exemptions. That basically means that everybody who's vaccinated should be given full information about the proposed benefits, the potential harms, level of effectiveness, and all of that kind of stuff about any vaccine.
Right,
that they
like the ingredients and
So the full prescribing label for the vaccines should be made available to everybody who is going to be vaccinated, or to their parents if they're not of if they're not a legal age.
Right, and I think that's kind of what you know, like the attorneys have said to me. That they're in the process of you know, changing the forms and the website to be able to accommodate the personal religious belief objection is, you know, I really think that they're trying to say, okay, yeah, we have to provide this option, but How do we protect the public health? How do we protect the university or the hospital or whatever institution you're talking about, the corporation, whatever, from you know, diseases?
Do they have any evidence that these vaccines do protect the public health? I mean, when you go looking for this data, it's not really there. You know, in terms of vaccinating
right,
a population,
but once
is
repeated enough. You know, you repeat it enough.
Yes.
You know, I mean, what is kind of shocking, and it's like when you start looking into this, like I'm starting to try to figure out, well, what does this mean? What does this really mean? And how are they going about, how are they going to be able to do this? And you start realizing that, you know, this has kind of been in place for a long time. For example, you know, you have scientific organizations whose, you know, specific purpose is to justify this kind of policy. Now, for example, I'll just give you one example, something called the Alliance for Aging Research. And it's supposedly a nonprofit educational organization providing, you know, research about different issues that aging people have to deal with. And they have a big, huge social media campaign going on right now pushing adult vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the only organization that's doing it, but it's one of them. And I happen to notice that every single board member on that organization has conflicts of interest with pharmaceuticals. They're all from pharmaceutical companies.
I'm shocked.
And interestingly enough, the Alliance was founded in 1986, which is the same year that Congress granted vaccine manufacturers immunity from liability.
Interesting.
So, you know, it's like
I was saying that I'm
so, and they state that their stated purpose is to influence policy. So not only do you have board members that are from the pharmaceutical companies, you've got, you know, board members who are from these, you know, global marketing companies, and it's all about, you know, implementing this policy of scientific consensus. So it's kind of scary, and again, going back to the House Resolution 327, it's like, well, you know, once you get the government, all of our congressional leaders to you know, basically say, yes, these are all good and wonderful, and not only do we have to have them, but the whole world has to have them, and these are the kinds of little things that we have to stop now, just like with, you know, this post-secondary school thing is, you know, students who are 18 years and older are adults, and adults, for now, have informed consent.
Children, the parents should have informed consent. I mean, the parents should be exposed to the full vaccine information. You know, whether they want to read it or just like, you know, when you download software, you just click the box saying, I agree. You know, that's your choice.
Right.
But I think a lot more parents would say, why don't I sit down and read this? Somebody's told me something about this vaccine. I should find out for myself. And I think most people would be shocked if they read the vaccine label to see this list of horrible side effects, including deaths that could occur with the vaccine that are acknowledged. It seems to me there's kind of a religious analogy. I mean, I think, for example, of the early days of Christianity, where there was probably a lot of room for people to have very different ideas about what this new belief system meant. But it wasn't too long, a few centuries, before there were dogmas and there were heresies and there were people being burned at the stake or, you know, other horrible deaths, purely on the basis of not going along with the consensus. You know, science in the 1800s was very much individuals who had money and would say, I'm interested in gravity or magnetism or something like that, and would do experiments.
Right.
But now we're dealing more and more with consensus. How many times have I heard that 97% of climate scientists agree that in it with anthropogenic global warming?
Right.
And we're now in the position of imposing the consensus on people. People will declare there is a consensus on vaccines, and we're going to stick a needle in your arm whether you like it or not. That seems to be where we're going. So we're now at the stage of dogma and heresy when it comes to science.
Right, exactly. And again, I think it just kind of gets back to, you have to, you know, the whole science thing, the safety thing is—it's a rabbit hole. It's a rabbit hole distraction. You just have to. I think that, you know, one of the things that I think that worked with this post-secondary school thing was, you know, it was like, okay, so you have your right, you're independent. The state legislature's intent is to give you autonomy and authority to, you know, develop whatever admission policy you want. But if you look at the statutes that charter these schools and these institutions, they all say, yes, you get to do what you want, but you still have to follow, you know, you don't get to not follow state and federal laws.
Right.
You know, you still, you know, within the confines. So like, all right, so you're an independent system that you have all this freedom to do whatever you want, and but since there's no law, you know, we've established the fact that there is no mandate for the vaccines and no law that grants you the authority to require these things, then your requirement of them makes you liable. Because now the government's not telling you that the student has to have this.
Well, so again, like I can see a university saying, okay, well, we require students to pay, fees to cover the costs of the student center, right? There's no law that says students have to subsidize a student center, mm-hmm. a student union, that kind of stuff. There's no law for that, but you can't join this university unless you pay that fee. If you refuse to pay the fee, you don't get in, right? So why can't they just say, well, we've invented this requirement. It's got nothing to do with state law, but we just have a requirement. So what would you say to that?
Exactly, and I think that's exactly how I think it's going to play out, is they're going to come back somehow, they're working on it, is to say, Yeah, sure. You can waive that requirement, but you know, here's the scientific consensus. Hey, even the House passed a resolution saying, you know, that there's a consensus here. And we have broad authority granted to us through, I believe it was Obamacare, that said, hey, you need to protect these institutions, these, you know, whatever, wherever the public is, you have to protect the public.
So I mean, I can see an argument based.
You have a choice now. You can either take this policy or you can find another school.
Right. I can see, I mean, you need to find a law that actually defends these people. Like, is informed consent the law in America? I mean, in legal, is there a legal principle that you need to be informed before you consent to a medical procedure? Is that actually the law?
Okay, so you're asking me, is there a legal thing that the informed consent?
I mean, people pay lip service to informed consent, and you know, there was the after effects of the Second World War, where people suddenly decided to take this seriously, having seen what the Nazis did to non-consenting patients. But
right.
Is it just kind of a vague principle that people can violate at will, or is it actually a law that you could go to the Supreme Court and win on?
Well, no, and then that kind of gets back into the whole liability thing. You know, again, is, you know, one of the problems that you have with universities is not only were they requiring adults to have vaccines that were not required by law,
mm-hmm.
And this change that they've decided to make does not apply to, I mean, that only applies to general admission. You have a whole other subset of students who are in health science programs who are given a list of, you know, 10, 20 vaccines that they have to get in order to be in that health science program. Well, where is that coming from? Again, there's no clear answer to that question. They'll say, oh, well, it's not the school requiring them. It's the hospitals and the clinics where the students will be doing their work that are requiring them. Well, really? Well, there's no laws on the books that require, that authorize or mandate vaccines for employees at hospitals. This is another institutionalization of the movement. Is they get away with it. They get to say that, well, you have to have this, or find someplace else to work. You have
right.
to have this, or find another school to go to.
Right.
Same thing with the Catholic Church. You have to have these, or find another school for your child to go to.
Right. Catholic.
And that's kind of how it's.
Catholic schools in Florida are private schools, right?
Right.
They're not in the
private schools. Yeah, but that one little mandate, that one little statute that requires them for admission applies to both public and private, and it
right.
has the provision for the religious exemption, which the Catholic Church has decided that they are not going to follow. And, you know, and I had this discussion with somebody who I said, well, how is it that they get away? I mean, how do they get away with saying, well, we're going to follow the part of the law that says you got to have these vaccines in order to be admitted. But we're not going to pay any attention to the other part of the law that says religious exemption.
I guess it'll take a lawsuit or threats of a lawsuit before they change
that. Well,
there
has been a couple lawsuits and they just can't win. And so it's, you know, obviously it's just going to get worse.
Yeah, it's going to get worse before it gets better, for sure. There's going to be a lot more attempts to bring in mandatory vaccines directly or indirectly. We're running out of time to talk,
okay.
So are there any other things you really need to get out before we close up?
Well, no, I just, again, this really was a big win because it will apply, it kind of sets the stage for you know, adults and other schools, and the follow the science and the broad powers caveat really is a harbinger of how this is all going to ultimately play out, witnessed by, for example, the House Resolution 327, which is the blanket endorsement of vaccination, paving the way for that scientific consensus. And then you have the institutionalization of this by all of these organizations being able to have their little requirements and then be able to say, well, if you don't like it, it's the highway.
Right, right.
And you've got all these scientific research organizations that are, you know, they get to influence vaccine policy.
We
so,
call them...
So my bottom line is always, this issue is not about vaccine safety. This is about vaccine policy. And that's what we really have to focus on.
Right. So, I mean, I think they call these organizations AstroTurf organizations because they're probably funded by the drug companies directly or indirectly.
Right.
And, you know, with the employees,
exactly.
you know, working
the
for them. Yes, and with the employees being employees of drug companies, they can spend time working for this organization, and that, you know, they're paid for by their owner, the drug company. But
right.
I mean, on the bright side, there has been a change in policy for colleges and universities in Florida. That now
yes.
it's pretty
yes.
clear that a
yes.
student can go to a university or college in Florida without
yep.
vaccination.
Without right,
without, there may be.
It doesn't have to be a religious exception. It can be a personal belief, and there will be no questions asked.
Right.
They will be accommodated.
Right. So
that
there are
is great.
There are clouds on the horizon, but you know,
where yes.
the sun is shining right now. So let's enjoy the sun shining,
and
we can deal with the yeah. rain when it comes in the
yeah,
future.
Yeah, and what I hope is that this will have a you know, this will have a ripple effect to other states. And their colleges, too. So
okay.
that's what we're hoping for.
Okay, well, thank you for joining me today, Tony.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate your time.
All right, you have a good day.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to episode 161 of The Infectious Myth. If you have a comment, question, or suggestion for a future guest, please email me at david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com. Like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Infectious Myth. Commit to monthly donations of any amount at patreon.com/infectiousmyth. Until next week, thanks for listening, and goodbye.